Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is July 21, 2010, and you're listening to show number 54 of Who's Reading the Organon. Last show, we did a pre-record recap of aphorisms 1 through 17, and we will be moving forward on to aphorism number 18 today. I wanted to welcome many of our new members to Homeopathy World Community. We've had about 23 new members this week, maybe 27 last week. The word is getting out. And I think I hear Vera on the line. Yep, she's
here. Debbie.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi, everyone.
You're doing okay today. We're coming off a little short vacation, and they revamped the entire HWC website yesterday, so we had a little bit of maintenance. And I thought I would start today with three short inspirational quotes. And you know how much I love Twitter. This one comes from Crazy Sage via James A. Cannon. He says, "Young souls get angry at others. Old souls get angry at themselves, but really wise souls have already turned the page." So we're turning the page because we're really wise, and we're going to also do a quote from Aristotle, which is kind of in lieu of the political atmosphere going on today. He says, quote, "A common danger unites even the bitterest of enemies." Okay, so everybody, let's get on the same page. Now we're on, the last quote is from an unknown author. "It is amazing how much you can accomplish when it doesn't matter who gets the credit." So I've been kind of introspective and thinking about how we can really improve the atmosphere for homeopathy in today's day and age. I want to thank Dr. Mohammed Rafiq for his recent article, "Tongue in Disease and Remedial Diagnosis," fantastic compilation of information. Also to Dr. Rajneesh Kumar Sharma on the, he posted from 1803 a document by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann on the effects of coffee. It's a really good read. We've had a lot of talk about coffee on the website, and that's another good one. And lastly, to Dr. Guillermo Zamora, who has written Homeopathy and Microorganisms Producing Exotoxins, and he's really into the scientific and medical information about MRSA and staph infections and what happens, and when you have a personal experience, it can be quite intense. And can I give you one more little factoid? That the Hahnemann University Hospital, established in 1885 and named after Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, is the hospital in Center City, Philadelphia. It's affiliated with Drexel University College of Medicine and serves as its Center City Hahnemann campus. And now, Vera, I hope I didn't take too much of our valuable time on odds and ends, and we will study.
Whatever we don't complete today, we'll just carry on tomorrow.
Sounds good.
And
okay.
Next year.
And next year, we're always going to look into the future in our crystal ball. Aphorism number 18.
Number 18. "From this indubitable truth, that besides the totality of the symptoms, with consideration of the accompanying modalities, nothing can by any means be discovered in diseases wherewith they could express their need of aid, it follows undeniably that the sum of all the symptoms and conditions in each individual case of disease must be the sole indication, the sole guide, to direct us in the choice of a remedy. One of the things that I like to do, some may know, I have this belief that everything that we say and anything that anyone writes is very often the answer to an unspoken question. So when I look at aphorism 18, I'm thinking, well, what else would people be thinking could be the guide and the indication to direct us in the choice of a remedy?
Okay. So you're saying that was the question.
I'm saying that my question is, what was Hahnemann thinking people might be saying is the guide to direct us in the choice of a remedy, apart from the totality of the disease symptoms, as described in the aphorisms before aphorism 18 and as described in aphorism 5.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that he's referring to theories. I mean, there's more than one answer to this. What else could people mm-hmm. think would help the choice of a remedy? A speculation? Mm-hmm. Theory about the hidden interior of man? A theory about the nature of the disease that is not really connected to the totality of symptoms? Do you see what I'm trying to do here?
It sounds like you're trying to answer the questions for those who have doubt and are trying all sorts of different theoretical notions and applications to find how do you select the best remedy? And he's saying indubitably, or it's an indubitable mm-hmm. truth. It's impossible to doubt or question. So going back to that quote-unquote question, it's unquestionable that this is truth, that if you have the totality of the case. And he also refers back in this particular aphorism number 18 to aphorism number 5, so it's possible we might want to review that one again,
mm-hmm.
that
aphorism
nothing can
5.
By any... Yeah, I have it. Do you want me to read it?
Okay.
Okay, it's useful to the physician in assisting him to cure are the particulars of the most probable exciting cause of the acute disease, as also the most significant points in the whole history of the chronic disease, to enable him to discover its fundamental cause, which is generally due to a chronic miasm. In these investigations, the ascertainable physical constitution of the patient, especially when the disease is chronic, his moral and intellectual character, his occupation, mode of living and habits, his social and domestic relations, his age, sexual function, etc., are to be taken into consideration. So he's covering all the bases.
So my query on 18 is, why did Hahnemann feel the need to write it? He's really hammering home to us constantly. He's saying...
Mm-hmm.
We have the totality of the symptoms, the totality of what's changed, what's the disease symptoms, what's the difference between sickness and health in our patients. And from that picture of disease, the picture of the diseased state in comparison to the picture of the healthy state, that's where we're going to have the symptoms and conditions, and obviously checking back as in aphorism 5 whether anything possible in our patient's lifestyle or history could be maintaining disease in him, or whether anything happened that could have been an exciting cause. All these things are the sole indication, the sole guide to direct us in the choice of a remedy. Now, Hahnemann's been telling us all this before, mm-hmm. so I wonder why is he stressing here the sole indication? It's as if, don't think of adding something else. All you need is this. So what else could we possibly be thinking of adding?
Well, I don't know whether he's saying that exactly. Sometimes wonderful teachers know that students have different ways of learning, and that they take in the information in their own personal, individual way. And I know that the best teachers provide information, the same information, in many different ways. So perhaps in this form of writing, aphorism number 18, he's giving it to us in a different way. And I'm thinking, when I come across this aphorism, I think of the sum and Aristotle. The whole is more than the sum of its parts. And he says it follows undeniably that the sum of all the symptoms and conditions in each individual case of disease must be the sole indication, which is kind of a unique way of re-quoting Aristotle. It's a gestalt. There's more to it than just these parts. You know, like in aphorism number 5, he's given us the parts. But now here in 18, this is the whole totality. This is the whole picture, and it's going to guide us.
I think what I find myself thinking is that the parts he's given to us the whole way along. I mean, aphorism 5 is with consideration of the accompanying modalities. But I found that the picture that it brought to mind is the occasional practitioner who, without knowledge of materia medica, and I've met practitioners like these who could be very nice people, but without any knowledge of materia medica, without case taking often, will swing a pendulum to decide what remedy to give.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there are people who do that.
And my feeling is that if, I don't know if anyone was doing that in Hanuman's time, I know that there are quite a lot of people who do it nowadays, not necessarily homeopaths per se, often people who want to add the modality. And that totally does not take into account the symptoms and the conditions and the case taking and the rigorous checking. And certainly in my experience of this prior to studying homeopathy is that it's a bit hit and miss. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a remedy will help, sometimes a remedy won't. Sometimes the practitioner has a little bit of knowledge and a lot of pendulum, and sometimes they have a little more knowledge and a bit less pendulum. But to my mind, that's an example. Anyone uh-huh. who's not taking the case and taking the case rigorously the way that Hanuman described
mm-hmm.
will not have a right. guide to direct them to the choice of a remedy. Because you need to take the case. As I was reminded again today, someone approached me about a case, and in every complex case, I know we very often hear disease names, we hear histories, and basically we need to sit down with every patient and take the case, whatever the name of the disease is, because mm-hmm. the only thing that will give us the guide to the remedy. It's not the name of the disease. Perhaps this is also why he's writing aphorism 18. There are people who give remedies or who in his time were giving remedies based on the disease name.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't do that without the sum of all the symptoms and conditions in each individual case. That is our sole indication. Nowhere in this aphorism does it say take the disease name and based on that give a remedy.
When you think about Hanuman himself, the man, he must have been extremely confident in his method, in what he was doing, in his understanding of the human situation, the human suffering, and was very good at deciphering exactly or discerning exactly what a remedy was going to be that the individual needed. And perhaps other people looking at him would think, oh my gosh, you know, he's just using intuition. But no, he's not using any of the other kinds of modalities, which he did investigate everything. He did investigate mm-hmm. magnets and other kinds of things. And so here he's saying, look, this is what I came upon. If you do it in this way, and you're surely going to be able to get this good result that I've been able to get. And like I said before, he is really a great teacher. And through his writings, we're able to learn from him. And I also feel like that amount of confidence that he had with this particular method is in the first words of indubitable truth, that he was constantly kind of wondering how other people didn't see it or could have any doubt in this system of medicine. And so he's saying, look, this is the way to do it. And the soul, he also goes back in this particular aphorism to the soul, S-O-L-E, which means one and only, as in it's the sole aim of the homeopath. It's the unifying factor. It brings us all back together to the sole mission of finding this truth. It's like, this is really funny, it's like Hahnemann is the legendary Superman, a person who comes on the scene to fight the crimes, the economic collapse, the suffering and the disease in the world that spread. We're really in this situation right now in the world, in a depression, and not just economic, but mental, if you read the news. And people want truth, justice, and the American way. Now, it doesn't have to, he's not American. But it's something that brings us hope and that will bring us to a better place. So I'll give one more little thing. I want to say, maybe we can say homeopathy is faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, and able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
So, I think we're getting confused here.
Yes, well, you know, I just want to say that he's not, he to us, he's kind of a Superman. But we need to understand how he works, how he finds the answers. So
but I
just
think also, Debbie, there are a couple of points that I'd like to make in relation to what you said. One is that Hahnemann did something that in today's world, it's hard to do. It's the point where you say the emperor is wearing no clothes, for those who are familiar with the tale, and those who aren't, look it up, because we're not going to go into it now. But the point where someone says, all these fancy doctors in Hahnemann's time, he's saying all these fancy doctors who come up with jargon to impress you do not know what they're talking about. So that's for starters. And when Hahnemann says, again, he's exposing something that the world does not want to accept. He's saying, look at you. You are sick and you are not getting better.
Mm-hmm.
That's first of all the point where Hahnemann comes in. And I think that that is a driving force when he sees sick humanity sighing in vain and people throwing jargon and speculation at them but no healing. But the second thing, when you talk about Hahnemann's confidence, Hahnemann's confidence is based on a rule, on the law of similars, the law of two similar diseases cannot occupy the same space in the organism at the same time. The stronger will overcome the weaker. These aphorisms that we'll deal with a bit later. But when you are operating from a place of complete, indubitable truth, and that really is the truth that Hahnemann operates from, the knowledge of the basis for healing, when you're operating from that basis, then your level of confidence inevitably has to be different. And I think that as homeopaths, we all need to be able to operate at least from that level of confidence that we're working based on a law of nature and not based on the theory of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I would love to have the amount of confidence that he has. And it's going to be a continuing journey for me to learn, study, and apply these principles. I want to also mention that you have a blog up on HWC. It's How the World Sees Homeopathy and What We Can Do About It. It's gotten a lot of press, and I think other people should take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do we have time for 19?
We can read it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Aphorism number 19 is, now as diseases are nothing more than alterations in the state of health of the healthy individual, which express themselves by morbid signs, and the cure is also only possible by by a change to the healthy condition of the state of health of the diseased individual, it is very evident that medicines could never cure diseases if they did not possess the power of altering man's state of health, which depends on sensations and functions. Indeed, that their curative power must be owing solely to this power they possess of altering man's state of health. He likes that word, solely.
Which one? Solely.
Solely. S-O-L-E-L-Y. Solely.
But it is a translation. It is a translation.
Thank you. I don't know what the original is.
I don't know if the original is the same in every use of soul. S-O-L-E.
S-O-L-E. We have
that
to have somebody investigate that.
Fishy investigation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Why is he giving us aphorism number 19 if he's given us 1 through 18 and it's been so complete? Is he...
I think the word is segue. I never know how to pronounce that word. Into what are medicines?
Aha.
What are medicines?
Okay.
Now, here we have a disease is an alteration in the state of health of the healthy individual, which expresses itself in morbid signs. So we need something that can cure, that can change the healthy condition of the state of health of the diseased individual.
Mm-hmm.
If a medicine can't cure disease if it doesn't possess the power of altering man's state of health, which depends on sensations and functions. So first of all, we're saying that a medicine has to, in order to be called a medicine, it has to have the power of altering man's state of health.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, in terms of how we see that, a medicine has to have the power of altering a person's sensations and functions. So coffee, is coffee potentially a medicine, a medicinal substance? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Any foods that cause change? Yes. So
well, we had that whole long list with asparagus and such, if you remember. Plain water, if you give water to a healthy person, is it likely to change sensation and function of that healthy person? Not unless it's taken immoderately.
Well, made a remedy from water. Well, we do have different waters on the earth that are used as remedies that contain many different kinds of minerals. So water, depending on where you live, that water could affect you. I know when I go to the mountains and the rooftox, the poison ivy is very heavily in bloom there, and a lot of people have arthritis that live up in the mountains, and I wonder whether the rooftox is going to be curative for them.
Interesting.
And when you see all the branches of the poison ivy that congregate all around the streams and the country folk have different words for streams. Anyway, the little pathways of water. And I just wonder whether that water could be remedies, right?
Well, there are remedies made from waters, as you point out.
Yeah.
But
and so anything that can alter health, then you say, is called a medicine.
Mind you, just thinking ordinary tap water now has so many chemicals in it, they should probably make a remedy out of that. Just it doesn't have steady quantities of the amount of chemicals they add to it. So,
And in addition, the pipes that are made of copper and lead and other kinds of metals that leach out into the water, then the individual can be affected. There are a lot of things, radon that comes up from the ground and into the water, just all sorts of things. And then today, most of our water have been purified, quote-unquote, purified through different filtering or chemical additives, which they say how many parts per million, but still they do affect us. And so that's a whole different investigation into the water that we drink and bathe in every single day.
So I think 19 really presents us with a parallel. Presents us with a parallel or what we're trying to match up. Disease is an alteration in the state of health of a healthy individual. So the medicine that comes to cure that has to be able to alter the state of health of the diseased individual. It's like the disease brings the healthy individual to disease. The medicine brings the diseased individual to health. It's quite basic.
But it's also the premise upon which we hear the stories of Hahnemann learning or saying in his eureka moment when he took the quinine and then got the illness of malaria and the symptoms of malaria from taking this remedy, this drug that was used for curing malaria at that time. So he's and the provings are based on this. Is that not true?
But you see, also just looking at the people who were willing to be part of the Provers Union, the people who in Hahnemann's time they were doing provings on crude substances very often, initially, before Hahnemann got into doing the dilutions. Hahnemann himself was endangering his own health. I think too much can't be made of this, that for the purpose of finding a healing method, for the purpose of developing a belief that he wanted to check out, he took this stuff himself. He made himself ill and observed throughout. I think, again, part of our reading of the Organon is really a discovery of Hahnemann, the person behind it, with the frustration and the drive and the monumental caring for humankind.
Well,
and do we have time for 20?
No,
we're
at the end of today's study session, and we want to remind everyone that this is two people who are studying Hahnemann's Organon of Medicine together, and we're just letting everyone listen in with us and comment if they're on the network, on the blogs, and we're learning together, and that's all it is. So anything, last words for today that can help us in our study, and then we'll be finished.
Just to keep reading. Keep reading, and I recommend anyone who can just read an aphorism, see if you can put it in your own words, or see if you can explain it to someone else.
Excellent.
Just that.
Everyone is a teacher and everyone is a student. So take the Organon off the shelf and read it, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye,
Debbie. Thank you very much, Vera. Bye-bye now.
Bye, everyone is listening.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it